right, welcome everybody. It is Saturday, March 14th. This is a Pandemic.News exclusive interview with Jeff Nyquist, who's an expert in the origins of World War IV and international warfare, geopolitics involving biological weapons, nuclear weapons, and other subjects that we'll get into shortly. His name is J.R. Nyquist, or Jeff Nyquist. His website is jrnyquist.blog, and he joins us today by video to talk about this coronavirus situation and why it might only be the opening salvo of things yet to come. So thank you for Jeff. For joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you on. I first noticed your piece in the Epoch Times, and I was stunned what you had written about there, how the Chinese, the communist Chinese regime, has planned for decades to develop and deploy biological weapons to destroy the United States. Can you give us a little bit of a quick overview background of that? Because a lot of people aren't even aware that that's been part of the mix here.
Yeah, well, General Qiao Chen was the defense minister of China and the head of the Party Military Commission from 1993 to 2003. He gave this speech sometime toward the end of his tenure. We don't know exactly when the speech was given. It was translated into English by Epoch Times in 2005 and published in their online newspaper then. The Epoch Times was a lot smaller then than it is now. And of course, at the time, I follow all things communist, Chinese, Russian, Eastern Bloc. I've been doing that for 32 years because my interest has been in mass destruction weapons, the sociology of them, and the fact that there is a, between totalitarian regimes and these weapons, there's a love affair. Because these are, as one Russian defector told me 20 years ago, the leaders of Russia, the leaders of China are psychopaths. They're not normal people. And so their love affair with weapons of mass destruction is something that's beyond our ken. It's something that we don't understand because we in the West are normal people. And so it's following this, Hannah Arendt, who wrote a 3-volume work on totalitarianism, said that people don't comprehend these regimes and what they do because they are so crazy that they can't wrap their heads around it or give credit to it.
So do you believe then that this is an engineered biological weapon that we're now experiencing, whether it was released on purpose or on accident? I guess we could get into that, but was this, in your view, an engineered biological weapon?
I'm quite certain that not only was it an engineered weapon, but that it was released accidentally. If you look at in detail at what is happening in China, it's clear that they were not entirely prepared. And how you can tell when communists are prepared is when they retreat and they make mistakes and they change what they're doing consistently, because they haven't had time to study what would happen if there was this kind of accidental release. So they were not quite prepared for this. I think that what happened is they were developing these weapons, and this particular one showed some kind of promise, and they were handling it too much. Maybe they were manufacturing additional cultures of it, and it got out because it is so contagious, 1,000 times more contagious than SARS, the original SARS.
So in effect, I think what you're saying, you can correct me if I'm wrong about this, is that they were actually working toward an even more deadly or more transmissible form of this. So this wasn't really the fully ready weapon to deploy. This is not the full potency that they were hoping to develop. Is that an accurate statement?
If you look at what Qi said in his speech, if you examine, it's a very long speech. It actually has some real brilliant pieces in it. Qi said that, to give the background, the Chinese made a deal sometime before 1992 with the Russians. They formed a kind of alliance in which they agreed to divide the spoils of the next world war so that Russia would get Alaska and parts of Canada and China would get the lower 48. Why did they want the lower 48? Qi kind of mentions this deal in passing in his speech. I heard about this deal from a Russian defector named Colonel Stanislav Lunev, who told me about it in February of 1999. He defected in 92 and was told about it in a meeting of the Russian generals and top military intelligence people. And he was told about it in early 92 after the fall of the Soviet Union. The nuclear war plan against America is still on, they told him. But we are not going to provide the troops to invade the lower 48. If you understand the concept of waging war, biological and nuclear weapons begin the war. Biological weapons probably begin the war. And then there's a follow-up invasion where you actually use troops and you seize the territory. That's a very important concept in their waging of war. And so Chi says in his speech, to clean up America, we must hit them with a biological weapon that is going to, or, and I would say that it would be a series of different weapons that would be used in combination. The most lethal weapons, by the most lethal biological weapon, of course, is anthrax, but it's not communicable. The reason for a weapon, a viral weapon, is that if you strike a country with the viral weapon first, you paralyze it economically.
And that's begun to happen in America.
Right. You paralyze it economically. And if it runs through the country, it collapses the medical system so that when you hit them with the more lethal weapon, there's nothing they can do.
So this is really bombshell information for most Americans, because there's an assumption out there in the minds of most people who, by the way, until 3 days ago, thought this was just the flu. Now they're all panicked at the grocery stores, just mobbing grocery stores all across the country, everywhere, even small towns and big cities alike. But they're thinking that, okay, we're just going to have to hunker down for 30 days, maybe 45 days, and then this will be over, and everything's going to return to normal, stock market's going to skyrocket back to where it was, everything's cool. But what you're describing is a scenario where this is really just the opening salvo of World War III, and that America could then be invaded by occupying troops from China, who, by the way, will achieve immunity first. They may have already achieved a large extent of immunity because they were infected first, so they will be able to invade, let's say, California. While California is suffering under mass infections, the Chinese troops are immune at that point.
I don't know. With an accidental release, you have something which I would call the evolution of intention. Where do they go from here? Imagine, I'll make an analogy. Imagine somebody, a posse of individuals is coming up on your house while you're asleep. This is an analogy to what the communists have been doing, both the Russians and Chinese, for the last couple decades since the fall of the Soviet Union. They're coming up on your house at night, and somebody accidentally trips and sets off a shotgun and shoots one of their posse by accident. Do they follow through on their attack on you, or do they run away? That's an interesting question. So there's evolving intentions here. We see that, what was it yesterday, a spokesperson for the Chinese Foreign Ministry basically demanded transparency from the U.S. government because they think that this was an attack by us on them.
Yes, I've heard that theory. It has been repeated even by some guests on independent radio shows and so on. Can you rule that out? I mean, I don't know that that's true. I think China accidentally released this from their own lab, but
you can rule that out.
Okay.
Look, nobody in America is crazy enough to intentionally release something that's going to basically affect us worse than them. They are a totalitarian society. They can exist without financial markets. Their financial markets are in large degree phony fronts to manipulate our financial institutions, to penetrate our society through business as a fifth column. They don't care if all of these markets collapse. They don't care what the standard of living of their people is. They don't care
what
the hardships their people have to endure. That's what makes them psychopaths and makes them communists. We know about this behavior going back to Stalin. And Stalin said, a Soviet lawyer that I know, former Soviet lawyer, she's in her upper 80s, she told me this. She said she met Stalin back in the late 40s, early 50s when she was a law student. She was a Soviet lawyer. And she said that Stalin taught them, and he was their great teacher. He said, if anybody accuses a communist of something, the strategy is you accuse them right back of the same thing. And that
right.
became a principle of their system and of the Chinese system too.
So what, first of all, just let me remind the audience You're listening to an interview with Jeff Nyquist. JRNyquist.blog is your website. And Jeff Nyquist is the author of a couple of very interesting books on Amazon.com. By the way, I've purchased both of those books and already received them, but I haven't read them yet. One of them is called Origins of the Fourth World War, and you might be able to get them at other bookstores as well. And of course, I'm Mike Adams, the publisher of Pandemic.news. And one of the things that both of us have in common is we've both been threatened by the deep state. We've both been banned and censored and blacklisted everywhere, which is why you're getting a really rare interview here between two people who know what's actually going on in the world. Or at least that's my take on it, Jeff. I'm sorry that you've been subjected to the same kind of horrifying deep state actions that I've been subjected to as well. But that's what happens when you start telling the truth in this country, isn't it?
Yes. Well, the thing people need to know about the deep state is that if you go and you read a book by Diana West called American Betrayal, and also a book written by Stanton Evans, Blacklisted by History, about Senator Joseph McCarthy, you'll see that the deep state is the communists. They infiltrated the government in the 1930s after FDR recognized the Soviet Union. We opened embassies and consulates here from the Soviets, and they used those as centers of subversion and espionage. Now, the communists here are domestic American communists who were already infiltrating in the 1920s. In a raid in Michigan, the Michigan state troopers and officials found a communist summer camp with barrels full of pamphlets on how to infiltrate schools, churches, boards of supervisor, city councils, and how to infiltrate and change our system. This is in the early 1920s. I think this raid was in 1923 or 24. And it's talked about in a book called Reds in America, which was published in the 1920s. We had a communist that bombed the Attorney General's house. This was the first Red Scare after World War I. Attorney General Palmer, a communist, threw a bomb through the window of his house. And, J. Edgar Hoover, sort of became the head of the FBI through a process of being involved through his work in the Justice Department at the time.
So when we hear about things like John Brennan, part of the deep state, part of the intelligence community under Obama, that he voted for communists in his past, that's not an accident. That's not a one-off thing. You look at James Comey and Mueller and McCabe and all these people, the Clintons, the Bidens, you're saying they're all rooted in some way in this communist effort to take down what the founders of America tried to create for this country. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, this is how I would describe it. Communism, socialism represents a new religion. It is a secular religion. Now, why do I say that? It's a faith. And the famous Whitaker Chambers, who had been a communist agent who was a courier for spy rings in Washington, D.C. in the 1930s, he referred to communism as a faith. Joseph Schumpeter called Marxism a religion. Joseph Schumpeter, the famous economist, in his book Capitalism, Socialism, and Democracy. Many people have made this analogy, but it really is true in a very profound way. Many famous historians and economists and thinkers have referred to it as a religion. Why is it a religion? Because they believe in the salvation of man through political action. That is, to use Eric Verglund's term, it is emanitizing the eschaton, which means it is about imminent things. That is, your salvation is not in the transcendent realm, not in the spiritual realm, but your salvation is in the physical realm of being, this veil of tears, where there is no salvation, by the way. There's no salvation in this world that we're living in. The salvation is spiritual. Christ said, my kingdom is not of this world. And so the great problem of the communists is they have invented a religion that its faith is based in science, scientism, positivism, atheism, and a rejection of all things spiritual. It is technically Marxism or communism is called dialectical materialism. The materialism part of that is to say that the only thing that is real are material things, the world of being. The world of the transcendent, that's unreal.
And so we see this same culture, or cultism, whatever you want to call it, this is what's running Google and Facebook and YouTube, and this is what's controlling Wikipedia. This is what controls the medical industrial complex, the pharmaceutical companies, the vaccine companies, the even you could possibly argue, you know, the whole transgenderism movement, which denies the biological reality and the self-identity as being something that you know is fixed, let's say. But I guess people could debate that point. But it seems like what you're describing has truly infiltrated and taken over everything from Hollywood, media, lawmakers, the banks, everything. Is that true?
Yes. You have to understand this new religion of socialism resembles in important sociological and historical characteristics the emergence of Christianity in the late Roman Empire. I will give you an example. We in the late Roman Empire, and the famous Max Weber, the famous German sociologist, political scientist, economist, he wrote about this in an essay called "The Soteriology of the Underprivileged." That just means the salvation of the underprivileged, and he kind of showed, and I think he was hinting at showing, you know, very subtly how socialism resembled this emergence of Christianity, and he emphasized that Christianity was, in its emergence, emerged out of the urban middle class. It was a urban phenomenon. It was not a slave religion. He denied what Nietzsche claimed about Christianity. Look, Paul was a tent maker. Christ was a carpenter. Paul was a fisherman. These were middle class occupations in the late Roman Empire, or in the Roman Empire at the time. And that it spread through the cities, and intellectuals of the Roman Empire were the ones that became very intrigued by it and helped to spread it. People like St. Augustine, for example, a very great mind, for example, one of them. And this was the phenomenon. It spread through the cities. And you'll notice that the term pagan, which the Christians developed, it means in Latin, ignorant country dweller, right?
Oh, really?
Yes, that's what it actually means. It's those peasants, those ignorant country dwellers. Now, I want to draw a parallel. Look at the red state, blue state phenomena today. If you look at it, it's really blue cities, blue intense urban centers, and the red states are the rural small town farm states, right? So you've got this, and why is this? And what is our word? Redneck, ignorant country dweller, right? A redneck? A redneck is a Christian right winger. A pagan where's the new religion coming from? The intellectuals, the cities. You see what I'm saying?
Well, roles have flipped, yeah.
Right. And you know, I got the epiphany because I'd read all these books. I'd read Weber. I love Roman history. I was sitting in my car. I was driving, and I was listening to National Public Radio. They were interviewing a U.S. senator, and it was about gays in the military. And the senator said, look, we can't do this because most of the people that volunteer to fight in our volunteer military are from the Bible Belt, right? And they won't volunteer for the military with this thing put on them. Well, they had a similar phenomenon in the late Roman Empire where the Emperor Theodosius the Great outlawed paganism, and they destroyed the pagan temples, pulled down the pagan idols, murdered the pagan priests. But the army was mostly made out of ignorant country dwellers. And so when the barbarian invasions came 12 years after Theodosius died, back in the early fifth century, when three tribes crossed the Rhine and invaded what was then the province of Gaul and wiped it out. That was the beginning of the fall of the Roman Empire. A few years later, in 411, Rome was sacked for the first time in 700 years. The city of Rome was actually taken by the barbarians and burned and pillaged. You had within one generation the city of Rome going from a population of about 800,000 people to a city of 30,000 people in the lifetime of one person. It's like a nuclear bomb. Even Hiroshima didn't do that after the bombing. You know, Western civilization was leveled. Why? Because why would the ignorant country dwellers of the Roman army fight for a regime that was led by Christians who destroyed their temples? Now right. We have the same thing. We are called the rednecks. We are supposedly the ignorant country dwellers, right? And they've taken over all of our institutions, and they've declared that we're the stupid people and that they know best. Why would our legions now fight for them?
Exactly. Very, so we're talking about the fall of Rome, Is there a scenario where you see the fall of this American empire, emerging out of this, what happens with this coronavirus? Not just the health care implications, the collapse of hospitals like we're seeing in Italy already, but of course the economic collapse. What about collapse in central banking, the Federal Reserve, and even trust in the central government? When I look at the federal government right now, all I see is criminal negligence, widespread incompetence. The CDC, Centers for Disease Control, can't make a damn test kit to test for disease. If they can't do that, why do they exist? I mean, that question's got to be going through the minds of millions of people right now.
Yeah, well, the government is not known for its competence at doing things. And the problem is, we've had the most prosperous society, thought of ourselves as the most powerful country on earth for before the living memory of most people. We emerged out of World War II as an unchallenged economic power, which we had like half of the world's gross national product was in the United States. Of the world economy, we were about half of it because the rest of the world was in ruins from the war. Our position, you can't imagine the kind of dominance the United States had economically, militarily. We had the first nuclear weapons. We dropped them on Japan after testing them in New Mexico, and it's taken a long time to erode that power. But with power, Nietzsche famously made the statement, power makes stupid. We have become lax, we've become hedonistic, we have become arrogant in our power. And our enemies, the communists, the one difference between the ancients and today is that the barbarians today, the Chinese and the Russians, that are threatening our empire, they converted to communism first. They got swallowed by the new religion first. Because of the sort of cultural envy of China, because China was eclipsed, China was the great power for so many centuries, was the great civilization. They were eclipsed after the Opium Wars in the 19th century. Russia was always the backward part of Europe. They emerged into communism thinking this was going to give them the edge over the West. So there was a combination of an animus against the West and this new religion that energized them, that they were going to take down capitalism, they were going to destroy Western civilization, and that this is behind the thinking of Lenin, Stalin, Khrushchev, and so on, and Mao Zedong and his followers. And I don't think we don't realize, my study began when I started studying these regimes and the history of these regimes. Communism, as a virulent philosophy, not only has infiltrated the United States, but it has always sympathized with its enemies, nuclear-armed Russia, nuclear-armed China. And these countries, I'll tell you what Colonel Luna said before a gathering in Washington of former high-level officials that met to hear him speak in February of 1999. When someone challenged him and said, "Surely the Russians do not want to destroy the great shopping malls of America," he asked him, and this guy was from the CIA. He asked him, "Are you a normal person?" Of course, the guy thought he was James Bond, and he was confused. And he said, "Well, you sound like a normal person." He said, "The people that lead Russia and lead China are not normal people." And he said, "I trained in my 30-odd years as an officer of the Russian, Soviet, and then Russian military for one mission and one mission only: global thermonuclear biological war against America."
So your mastery of history is really extraordinary. But what I'm asking you to do is apply those trends and cycles that we see repeated throughout human history to a projection, if you're willing to. And what does this really mean in a practical sense for what we might be facing? Where do we go from here, in other words?
The big problem we have is that the left, which is the leading edge of the new religion in our country, has largely taken over our institutions, our media, our academia, and is embedded in the administrative staff of our government agencies.
Big
And they
tech.
absolutely despise the traditional values of America and what most of the American people believe. And this is a fundamental problem for us. And they have a kind of sympathy for these regimes, unstated, maybe unconscious in many cases. And What we have seen since President Trump got elected in a very unexpected event in 2016 is that we've seen them attack him as an agent of Russia. And they were able to do this because we have been the victim of a series of disinformation operations, beginning with the collapse of the Soviet Union. There's a book written by by Joseph Douglas, the late Joseph Douglas, based on defector testimony, called Red Cocaine. The Russians devised their long-range strategy under the Brezhnev Committee, which met between 1957 and 1958. They instituted the policy together with the Chinese in 1960. The policy involved a fake split between Russia, Soviet Russia, and China to cause the West to come in and build up China. It also involved a future fake collapse of the Soviet Union, which famously the defector Anatoly Golitsyn wrote about in a book called New Lies for Old that was published in 1984. He predicted in a chapter called The Final Phase all of the events of the collapse of communism. He predicted them in 84, not on the basis of being psychic, but on the basis that he had worked inside KGB think tanks in the late 50s in Moscow before his defection.
You're saying the breakup of the USSR was staged in order to feign weakness and then provide an opportunity for more Soviet spies and agents to further infiltrate the United States to bring down the U.S.
Yeah, it was based on Sun Tzu's holdout baits entice the enemy, feign disorder and destroy him. And right, it was right. Modeled on something the Soviet Union did in the 1920s called Operation Trust. It was conceived of by Felix Dzerzhinsky, was the head of the Cheka. His deputy, Menzhinsky, was schooled in Chinese. He spoke fluent Mandarin, and he suggested this creation of a false anti-communist front called the Trust. Its headquarters were in a bank in Moscow. And they convinced the entire world, all the intelligence services of the world became convinced that it was a legitimate anti-communist organization, that it infiltrated the Soviet Union and had already taken it over from within for all practical purposes. And that is why various Western countries recognized the Soviet Union in the 20s and started trading with them, because they believed effectively the Soviet Union was no longer communist. They extended this idea. It was a KGB general named, I just forgot his name. He was part of the Brezhnev Committee who forwarded, his name was Mironov, Dmitry Mironov. He conceived of them doing this again. The KGB was reorganized in 1959 to carry out this long-range strategy, which they projected would go from 1960 to the year 2000. It was a 40-year long-range strategy. Now, where are we going with this? Why am I mentioning this as background? But in order to understand where we are now, you have to understand this background. We are, as a country, totally disoriented. Nobody knows this stuff. If you start talking about it, your name is blackened. You're not allowed to into polite society. Excuse me. You're not allowed into polite society. And so, but what I would tell you is we are in the final phases of the strategy. They were preparing a biological attack on us as part of a sequence of things that they've worked out. They've infiltrated our society. They've turned the heads of our elite. They've succeeded in one after the other influence operations on our people. We are not oriented to the enemy. Meanwhile, they're telling their people in Russia and China that we are their enemy and that we are doing terrible things. In Russia, Iran, and China, they're hinting or outright telling their people that we attack them with a biological weapon.
Why are they doing this?
Yeah. In the Soviet military literature, I'll give you the name of the book. It's called Soviet Military Strategy, edited by Marshal V.D. Sokolovsky. In the book, it says the most important war preparation for nuclear biological war is to orient the people of your country to who your enemy is, why they have to hate them, why you have to annihilate them. Now, when they say that we attack them with this biological weapon, that is orientation. That is a war prep in itself. So we have to wake up to this.
And what you are describing is absolutely happening. We've seen, in fact, intelligence officials from China just in the last few days blaming the United States and saying the U.S. Army deployed this as a weapon in Wuhan. So that is a very public accusation. But you mentioned that there's a sequence of events. I'd like you to speak more to that sequence because, okay, all right, there's the infiltration, the indoctrination of America. That's already happened. The universities are basically communist indoctrination centers. The media, the tech giants, all run by just full-blown communists now. No speech is allowed in America that counters their obedience demands for radical left-wing fascism slash communism. But, okay, then now the virus comes. A softening up operation for America. In your extensive knowledge of history, what comes next?
Economic collapse is one of the most important parts of the sequence. To use either terrorist attack with a WMD or to use a biological attack, which would be attributed to terrorists. In this case, this is an accidental release, but it can serve the same purpose because it begins the sequence. You see the stock market collapsing. You see the panic. You see what's happening in Europe. They're talking about closing off countries, closing off states of regions, locking people
down
in
their
homes.
They've done it in Spain today. Spain is under lockdown, and Italy, of course. Yeah, it's going to spread.
Right, it's spreading. You got news yesterday that Deutsche Bank is in trouble.
Yeah.
You're going to have, we already have, because of, you know, the socialists have pushed both in Europe and the United States for these massive welfare, this massive welfare state, which has effectively made extremely prosperous countries, brought them to the edge of bankruptcy, because now we have to pay for everything for everybody, and it has to come out of the government coffers. Now, this has two effects. One, it creates massive indebtedness in the government, but it also crowds out defense spending by the respective countries. Europe is practically incapable of raising the level of its defense readiness because it is so overcommitted to welfare payments. The United States is approaching this too, so that you have this heavy indebtedness. The banks are overstretched. And it's not just the federal government. It's state, city, local governments, counties. They're overstretched across the board. When you have a decline like this, revenue's going to get killed here. And they need this constant flow of revenue to keep this vast welfare machinery going.
That's right.
You get all these people dependent on it now. And of course, you have all these businesses that are going to go under. Look at hotels, retail,
airlines,
restaurants, airlines,
energy, yeah, all
the whole service economy. Yeah, exactly. And a lot of these people, I know this. I had a close friend who owned two hotels. He had mortgage payments on those hotels. When you can't make the mortgage payment, the banks take the hit. And when you have it across the board in a massive mega event, you know, what they call a black swan event, you now have a hit against the banks that's so massive. This is like what happened in the late 1920s and early 30s, where you had 6,000 banks in the United States collapse. This is what we're facing now. Now back to the Russian and Chinese strategists. Collapsing the political system is very important for creating, for exacerbating the political differences, which we have, which is between the people of the new religion and the people of the old religion. We're a divided country. And it's the virulence of this divide we can see in this animosity. And we have had a very strange preparation for war in this rhetoric, saying the president of the United States is a Russian agent.
Which is, of course, you accuse your... When you're a communist, you accuse your enemy of what you are doing yourself.
Right, exactly. And who is making the accusation against the president? The people
that
in the 1960s were supporting Ho Chi Minh.
Right.
These old politicians that are accusing the president, when they were kids in the 60s, they were the ones burning the American flag and celebrating Ho Chi Minh and the communists.
Now, won't all of this, I'm sorry to interrupt, but you raise a question. Won't all of this get a lot worse if the November elections in the United States are essentially canceled because of this event unfolding now? I predicted 2 weeks ago that we might not see elections in America. I mean, perhaps it's still too early. Maybe we will, but we're starting to see cancellations of fundraising events and political events and rallies will be canceled. How does anybody even run for office if society is shut down? And then how do we have elections if people are in quarantine and lockdowns? Wouldn't this just create just wild mistrust to not have elections? That would just exacerbate the political divide that you're describing.
It is, I mean, this biological event, this attack, inadvertent attack, because it is a weapon, this will continue on at least through a year from this coming August. That is what the government has determined. I don't know if this has been released to the public or not, but they're expecting it to go on at least that long. That means way past the election. And I think it depends on how, you know, look, the economic unraveling is going to proceed very rapidly before the election.
Yes.
Whether they can stabilize it, that we're going to be living in a very different economic and political environment. Now, how scared does our left get? Do they say, we got to pull together or we're all going to die? Or does it get exacerbated? And we're at a sort of a crossroads, a crisis point. And I'm sure in Beijing and Moscow, they're watching very intently to see if we divide or if we hold together, whether they can carry forward with their strategy. But it all depends on our unity.
If they perceive then more weakness, more divide in America, that would perhaps encourage them to adjust and evolve their strategies to be more aggressive against America?
Right, exactly. The opportunity. It's all about, you know, evolving intention is about opportunity. You have this attack. The society is challenged in a very fundamental way, and our political institutions are being challenged. This is the biggest challenge our political institutions have had probably since the Civil War, because we are in a state of having lived in a kind of Disneyland, you know, for the last 70 years. And so as a consequence, how we meet this challenge will determine whether or not they play another card in this. There's another outbreak. There is a outbreak of war, maybe in the Middle East, maybe in the Far East, where things are now elevated.
Well, let me bring in an unconfirmed rumor that I'm getting from two of my sources. And I always joke with my audience, 4 out of 5 of my sources are sane and the other 20% are not. But so I can't confirm this, but what I'm hearing is that Trump will use this national emergency to lock down America, and then he plans to have the military arrest the traitors of America. You know, some of the names I mentioned previously, the people who ran the Russia hoax and so on, that Trump, in essence, has a plan to put America under martial law temporarily and then use those powers to really destroy many of what he considers to be enemies of America. I would agree they are enemies of America, but that's a, you know, obviously that's crossing a threshold right there of executive power, military power. So is that a possibility? I mean, that would be a game changer in many ways if he did that, but how do we then extricate ourselves from what would essentially be a military dictatorship at that time?
Well, you have the example of Lincoln in the Civil War, where Lincoln said the Constitution is not a suicide pact. You know, he suspended writ of habeas corpus. You had a revolt in the South. The South wanted to preserve slavery against the Lincoln presidency. And so they revolted. The vice president of the Confederacy, Mr. Stevens, gave a speech. The cornerstone speech, in which he said that the Confederacy is based on white supremacy and African slavery, and that was it, that the founders were wrong about freedom, that it didn't apply to everybody. And that was such a crisis in the United States, where you had Americans fighting Americans, Americans killing Americans over an ideological question of the status that black people were going to enjoy in the country. And this was such a fundamental country that nearly 1 million Americans died fighting over the meaning of this. The Constitution, you know, Lincoln was a virtual dictator in many respects. But yet the Constitution was restored. We did not have a military dictator. General Grant, who was respected in the South and the North because of his humane treatment of the Southern soldiers and officers at the end of the war, was able to bring the country back together. They ended Reconstruction after Grant left office, and the country began to heal, which it's not even now completely healed from that war.
But what you're saying, what you're describing, I think, is that there could be a purge of the communists who are traitors against America. There could be an opportunity to eliminate them, literally eliminate them, and then still restore the constitutionality of our country, and then move forward as more of a unified constitutional republic after that, because it's happened before. That's what you're describing.
Yeah, I mean, look, in the Civil War, we gave a lot of clemency. I mean, they didn't put Jefferson Davis in, they didn't hang Jefferson Davis, let's put it that way. They didn't go after these people. Defeating them militarily, the South accepted the end of the war. Robert E. Lee wrote to the other officers, accept the clemency. Let's just get back to our lives. Let's not,
Yeah, but that civility is gone today. The radical left,
Yes,
they want to kill every
we have a
conservative
problem.
leader.
And the thing is that communism is much more, it's very insidious because it parades as an idealistic thing where we're going to make a better world. And a lot of young people and a lot of, frankly, people who ought to know better, who are older and educated, believe in it. And I have heard these rumors you're talking about. I've heard them from people who have counterintelligence background, people who
Yeah.
are in respectable positions. And I have seen hints of information that there is actually people who are looking at it, who are judges, lawyers, respectable people who are concerned about the infiltration of the legal profession, the infiltration of the court system, the corruption of our fundamental law, and that this question has been arised is what is a domestic enemy? What is treason? And trying to work out what do we do with people who have a mindset and an ideology that's diametrically opposed to the
Yes,
Constitution and our
yes.
fundamental laws, and they're trying to distort those laws.
Well, I've previously, even before this coronavirus, publicly called for Trump to declare an emergency and dispatch the military police to arrest the CEOs of the tech giants, for example. I've publicly called for that. Of course, I get attacked for calling for such things, but I say that if we can't have the First Amendment, and if we don't have the rule of law, and if we don't have half the country even respecting the outcome of the 2016 election, then we don't have a republic, and we've got to take emergency action to restore our republic. So, perhaps that might have been considered a radical suggestion before, but it no longer looks that far outside the realm of possibility.
There's another dimension of this problem. You may remember a person named Ann Barnhart, who was a cattle futures trader in Colorado back in 2011, when there was a when a former governor of New Jersey, Corzine, stole, I think it was $2 billion
Oh,
from the cattle
Corzine.
futures
Yep.
market.
And he got
And
away with it scot-free,
she
too.
really tried to stage a protest against that, saying we're no longer living in a nation of laws anymore. I think she was one of the first people to, she's a pretty principled person, so she took this, what people saw as a very radical stand, but she was actually right. And what she was saying is that if you allow this, your system now is no longer under law. These Marxists, she called them, these Marxist socialists now have controlled the government, and now they're going to start looting you through your own
Yes.
institutions.
Which has happened, by the way, of course.
Yes,
Yes.
and I'll it's very important for people to understand something about communism. And I get this from Benjamin Gitlow, was one of the leaders of the Communist Party back in the 1920s. And he wrote a number of fabulous books because he broke with Stalin and he became an anti-communist. And he went through a very difficult time, giving up his religion, basically. And what he explained was, he said that this new religion, this socialism, communism, there are two principal kinds of people that are in it. The rank and file followers are very sweet, naive people who believe that this thing is going to bring humanity to the millennium, right? Where the lion lies down with the lamb and everything. But then the leaders of the movement, they're all barracuda and shark. These people are they're narcissists, they're psychopaths, they're disordered personalities who crave power and seek to victimize people. And he describes this in his book, Gitlow's primary book. He describes this very, very brilliantly and in detail about the communist leaders he knew and how they treated people and how they attacked each other, how there's this vicious infighting at the top of every communist system. And of course, it assures this kind of you know, the best may the best psychopath win, basically. This is why,
Oh
you know,
my.
I asked Colonel Lunev, it was very funny when this first arose, and when I first met him in 1998, I said, are there any good people in the Russian general staff in the Kremlin? And he looked at me like I was nuts, and he said, these are not normal people, these are crazy persons, you know, these are not normal human
Right.
beings, these are crazy persons. And he said that you can't rise in that system unless you have this evil tendency. You can't get above the rank of colonel, for example. You can't get up into those general ranks unless you possess these. And you know there's a very interesting book called Political Ponderology, written by a Polish psychiatrist. When the communists took over Poland, a group of Polish psychologists and psychiatrists were given indoctrination sessions at one of the major universities in Poland, and they all noticed that the lecturer was a psychopath. They noticed his traits. And they all got together and they said, do you notice these people from the new regime, they're all psychopaths. We ought to do a study on this, you know. And they got together and they did a 20-year, you know, secret study of the regime under the guise of doing other kinds of things. And they determined that there were a number of different psychopathic personalities that were promoted by the regimes, and they determined that psychopaths, they recognize each other,
huh.
and they network with each other, and that they hide who they are because they know that if normal people understood what monsters they are, you know, like Ted Bundy was
yeah.
a psychopath,
or Barack
we
Obama,
would want, you know, Fry Ted Day. Remember, all those people showed up, wanted him to be fried in the electric chair,
right?
In Florida, back in whatever year that was that they killed him, they executed him. That the psychopaths know, and that in a sense that the political movements, you know, whether it is National Socialism or communism, they are sort of criminal psychopaths recognize each other, say, hey, wait a minute, this is the best game in town. They join it and they develop
yep,
it.
They skim money off the people, they rule over the people, and then they claim to be your savior.
Right, exactly. And now getting back to Barnhart and the cattle futures market and what she was saying, she said the same thing. There are psychopaths. She had the same kind of insight. We have a double problem. Not just the ideology that people get suckered into communism, socialism, and they believe it and they get carried, but the people who have been advancing this agenda in our political system, people like Corzine, people like Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, they are abnormal personalities. You look at Elizabeth Warren. Is this a normal person?
No.
You know?
She's...
And the thing is, you look at the corruption of Joe Biden. You look at this whole corruption, this deal of
yep.
his son and the Ukraine company. This kind of corruption and stealing, these people share a criminal psychology. And so we have this corruption problem. At the same time, we have the treason problem.
Well, and also, let me throw this in. Don't forget, a lot of these people are pedophiles, so they are monsters against humanity. They prey on children too, you know. And look at the donors to the Democrats and how many of them are involved in pedophilia and weird, like hiring black escorts to be their dungeon slaves, sex slaves, and Hollywood, the massive pedophilia, the human trafficking, all that. I know you don't get into that. That's not the area where you
well,
have knowledge.
Well, I actually,
it's out there.
You know, in studying Russia, I actually have some information on that for you.
Okay.
Do we dare hear this? You know, doing this research for 32 years, I come in contact with Russians, Ukrainians, people from Eastern Europe. I've developed a lot of contacts, even some of them dangerous contacts. They want me to go to Moscow. They want to give me money. They want to help me do things.
Right, bad idea.
But I at least have studied strategy long enough to know that no. but anyway, I had a source whose grandfather was the head of administrative organs in Karelia. Administrative organs is a very high level group that in the Soviet system that monitored the KGB, that oversaw it. You know, it's like an overwatch, make sure the KGB doesn't turn against the regime. And of course, he knew Andropov. Andropov was the head of this was in the 1970s. He was the head of the KGB at the time. And this man's grandfather came to his mother and said, I am challenging Andropov in the Central Committee because he is developing pedophile rings, because he believes that is the ultimate weapon for penetrating the West, to develop perversion
and he was right.
as a weapon. Right?
And that has happened.
And yes. And so his grandfather said, if I should die suddenly, take the boy and go to Kiev. Get out. The KGB comes to the door, don't answer the door. I am doing something very dangerous. Andropov could kill me. Of course, within a matter of weeks, the grandfather was dead. They sat in the house with the lights out as the KGB pounded on the door. She fled with the boy to Kiev. As people familiar with that system know, they weren't very good about transferring people's files between regions. So she was able, they were able to not be bothered living with relatives in Kiev. But this story was then confirmed. I had Ukrainian sources that had guys that had worked in Komsomol camps in the late 70s and early 80s saying there were rampant rumors in Crimea of orgies, of sexual perversions being encouraged in Komsomol camps, where they were bringing prospective future politicians from social democratic parties in the West were coming to these camps. Yeah. And were getting drawn into these orgies.
And videotaped, of course, to be blackmailed later by who you know, all the people, all the names.
The ultimate blackmail, yes.
Right, right. The Jeffrey Epstein airplane rides with videotapes and all, yeah, all that stuff. Okay,
now,
so,
you know, Jeffrey Epstein's girlfriend was the daughter of Robert Maxwell, whose original name wasn't Robert Maxwell. He was from the communist bloc. And he became one of these funny people who moved from the communist bloc, like George Soros, come from the communist bloc and come here and suddenly become extremely rich and powerful.
Yeah.
And of course, Robert Maxwell was believed to be an agent of the Mossad, but it was also widely believed he was a double agent working for the KGB. And there were even some information out of the former Soviet Union that that was so. And so for her to be her to be involved with Maxwell's operation, this incredible underage
Epstein
honey trap,
yeah.
You know.
Well, it's some sick, twisted stuff that's been happening behind the curtains and in dark rooms and dungeons around the world. A lot of sick, twisted stuff. Sometimes I can't even psychologically handle sometimes I don't even want to know how, because you just look a little bit at what's going on and it's so damn horrifying that it almost damages you to look at it, even to as a journalist. But look, so fortunately, we're almost out of time. I don't want to go there today. Tell people, 2 minutes, 3 minutes left here. Tell people from your point of view, back to the practical matters, the pandemic, what should people know and what should people do? And also, what are you doing, by the way? Because if you take this seriously, you would be prepared. Now, not that I'm asking you to disclose your personal situation or privacy or whatever, but I hope you're not just academically talking about this, but you don't have any backup supplies. So tell us where you are.
Yeah, well, every time I go to the store, I buy 5 weeks ahead. Five days ahead. So, and I go to the store 3 times a week. So I continually, now I've got, I've got couple hundred tins of sardines that are out of date. I favor
right.
Sardines, by the way, canned meat, packed in olive oil. That's what
they're
favor.
Super healthy for you.
Yeah,
super
and also
healthy.
Stews. Stews are good. But rice keeps large bags of, I get Lumberg brown rice. And I try to eat fresh food all the time because I don't want to, you know, and of course, it's, you're going to, you know, if nothing happens, you're going to have to throw away a lot of stuff, which I have. But dry goods and canned goods, things that will keep, ideal is to have a year's supply. That would be the ideal. I mean, obviously 5 years would be ideal, but it's, you know, if you're on a budget, what can you do? But you can do this. And I think it's very important. But I think that more important than the personal preparations. And I think everybody should be responsible, you know, saying the government is responsible for me. No, I'm sorry. The government can't be responsible for
that's
us.
Right.
That's
right.
That's beyond
right.
the government's
You're on
ability.
Your own.
We are individuals. We are self-responsible. We need to be able to feed ourselves. And of course, I have tried to keep, very important, keep care of my health. I'm not on any medications.
Good.
You know, I eat a very pure diet. I don't eat gluten. You know, I've developed sensitivities to those things. I've got food sensitivities. I think a lot of people my age have those because of the kind of awful food that we have in this country in
yep.
a lot of areas. You have to be careful. So I eat organic. I think you're very big on that.
Yes.
And But also to be, I'm lucky. I live in a small town of under 30,000 people. I did that on purpose. I moved here 22 years ago, 23 years ago almost. I moved here knowing that this kind of thing was coming, that I didn't want to be in the big urban center. I wanted to be in a place where I could know the mayor. I could talk to the city council. I could meet with the head of the board of supervisors personally, which I have been able to do that because it's on such a, it's a more human scale, so to speak.
Yes. Okay. One minute left. What should the listeners be doing right now in your view?
Educating themselves, orienting themselves to what the dangers are and getting ready in terms of having food, extra food, and, you know, talking with their neighbors, educating that we have an enemy both within and without, and we have to be unified as Americans. We have to support our leaders that are trying to do the right thing and be wary of those that appear to be following the enemy's line.
Okay. All right. Excellent advice. Jeff Nyquist, jrnyquist.blog is the website. Again, he's got a couple of books on Amazon and other booksellers. One of them is Origins of the Fourth World War, which I may get a chance to read that when society shuts down, Jeff. I'm going to have a lot of reading to catch up on when the roads are all run by the National Guard. So I want to thank you for joining today, and I really appreciate your insight. Your historical knowledge is just outstanding, and I hope we get a chance to talk again as things begin to unfold along this the sequence that you've laid out, because I think you're right. I think you're right.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
All right, folks, that's it for Pandemic.News interview for today. Definitely get prepared, and we'll bring you more conversations with other experts in the coming weeks. Pandemic.News is the hub. Thank you for watching. Share this everywhere, and you do have permission to repost this on YouTube if you want to have your channel banned by YouTube because of all the keywords that we just spread scattered throughout this entire interview. But thank you for watching. This is Mike Adams, the publisher of Pandemic.News. This has been a Pandemic.News video report. If you want to live, read Pandemic.News.